Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit JanPro.ca. All right, now joining us as we continue to set up Game 7 tonight at Rogers Arena between the Canucks and the Oilers. Spot on the Western Conference Finals on the line. He's from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. He's a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. He is Kevin Woodley. Kevin, thank you as always. How are you today?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're doing well. We're getting hyped. We're getting caught up in the anticipation of Game 7 tonight. I got to ask, did Rick Tocchet get you for just a second with his Thatcher Demko is starting joke yesterday?
No, because I wasn't quite paying full attention probably. So I'm not the brightest guy. Too many pucks off the head over the years. So like my reaction is delayed. If I'd actually been smart and attentive, he probably would have gotten me like he got so many other people. But, there's sort of like Thomas will tell you, it's a little slow upstairs for me these days.
I will not tell you that. I think you're bright as anything. Mr. Woodley, hey, Thatcher Demko, what are you seeing watching him work out? Like one thing I've noticed because he wasn't at practice with the full team yesterday is it does seem like it's day on, day off still. Day on, day off. Does that tell you anything about the status of his recovery?
No, because I don't think we know what's going on when we don't see him. Mm-hmm. I think quite often he skates before we get there, and I think quite often that's by design.
Right.
So, I saw a video from Edmonton ahead of game 6, and I thought there was still some hesitation on the left side, still a little narrowing of the butterfly into some pushes, something, looked like perhaps being a little protective of that. And then I saw him today, and I got to be honest, I was kind of a little blown away by what I saw. Screens, rebounds, deflections, full speed, no restriction in terms of the type of things they were throwing at him. Like no control. The environment was not controlled in any way. The screens and the motion sort of almost game-like. And then some of the post play stuff, like reverse track, one skate on each post down on the ice and a butterfly, which is, we believe, the position that led to the original injury in Winnipeg. Like there are a bunch of goalies in the National Hockey League that can't even get themselves into that position, let alone mm-hmm. move in and out of it as powerfully as Thatcher does. And so to see him in that today, like to me, that's, to be honest with you, that's last steps. Like that's ready to play if you can do this and feel good about it afterwards. Now, obviously, in terms of getting comfortable with the pace and game speed, we haven't seen him out there enough with a full group. And that's something that they've kind of insisted upon throughout. We heard Tocchet talk earlier about, needing to see him in that environment and him needing to be comfortable, with the pace of play and the reads and all that goes into it. But, at least physically and without getting to ask the question or see what he looks like after or how he feels after or is there swelling after, I watched a goalie today who was doing every move that you would need to do in order to play a hockey game.
There was a moment there where I thought he was in a little bit of distress when I was watching. I was late to the media room. We chatted about it afterwards, but he stayed in goal too. So that's another positive sign for me in evaluating that. Artur Seelov's looking to bounce back after a 5-goals-against performance in game 6. Obviously he's been cool, calm, and collected, and he's come up huge for this team over the course of this playoff run. And yet Edmonton has gotten to him. Over the course of the series, I think it's fair to say. Not repeatedly. I mean, he hasn't been like the reason, certainly wasn't the reason the Canucks lost game 6, but they have been able to get to him to an extent. Where are you at sort of in terms of evaluating Seelov's at this point in this series?
Well, you kind of two sides to it, Thomas. Like the side of like it's remarkable that there hasn't been, any type of collapse. Like you're not seeing him outside of game 1, mm-hmm. which I thought he did not play his game in that game. He was, out of position at times.
Happy feet.
Uncharacteristic in terms of his movements where he was on the ice. Like he looked unsettled. Since then, like he hasn't. Has he gotten beat on some shots that maybe, some other goalies on this roster don't give up? Yeah. Do I worry a little bit about Edmonton trying to look for offense from the outside? Like I thought early in this series, one of the things that was happening, especially after Artur settled in, is the Oilers are a team that create dynamic offense down low and in tight. Well, in tight, you're playing to his strengths, right? Like, he's not Thatcher Demko, but like the movements in and out of the posts, some of the saves he makes on lateral plays behind the net in tight, like they're saves that some goalies don't make, but he makes them in somewhat easily because of the system he plays and how effectively and powerfully he plays it. One of the things over the course of his young career that we've noticed, and I know other goalie coaches have both at the American League and NHL level, is some of the stuff that goes in from distance, the lower quality stuff that does end up beating him from higher in the zone. We've talked about sort of learning, I don't want to say struggles with screens because it's very much a learning process in terms of how to manage them at the NHL level when the bodies are bigger and faster and more deliberate, especially as Zach Hyman at, you know, specifically trying to push you. We talked about Besser doing this year for the Canucks, push you into very specific spots at very specific times as the shot's being released. Like the only way to get used to that is to do it. And so it's not a criticism, but that's an area that, you know, statistically end of the eye test he struggled with. And so if the Oilers start to look for more of that type of offense, even though it's not necessarily playing to how they like to create, did that become worrisome? And I don't think we're at the point where you worry about it, but there have been a couple that have gone in on shots that I, you know, I'm not even sure you're taking otherwise. So I do think they're starting to look for some of those opportunities, and that maybe is a little unsettling heading into Game 7.
Heading into Game 7, the Edmonton Oilers are going to turn once again to Stuart Skinner. He had something of a bounce back performance, but man, the team took care of things in front of him in Game 6, faced only 15 shots on goal, only beaten by Nils Höglander on a second chance when the defense really broke down in front of him. What did you see in Game 6? How nervous should Oilers fans be about Skinner's form heading into Game 7?
Well, I mean, I saw a guy who had reset nicely, right? Like, I saw Stuart Skinner, the Stuart Skinner we saw all year that I talked about going into this series I wasn't worried about. And obviously, you know, I got that wrong after he loses a job three games in. But he looked more like the guy I saw in the regular season. And that said, like, there's still exposure there. So some of the saves that you highlight, you're right, he didn't have to make many. But that one on Hughes, man, having a look around a screen, come from having vision on the glove side of the screen, come past the screen on the other side and get a blocker on a labeled shot from Quinn Hughes. And the replays did that so much justice. Like, that thing was headed perfectly into the top corner. And that's a hell of a save, right? Like, that's – Thomas, I know you don't like these ones, but we've talked about layered screens that go into the top corner of the net. That's a shot that goes in 43% of the time in the National Hockey League.
I like them. I have no problem with them. I just think
you just don't like counting on them as your only way to score.
I just think it's a high variance method of attempting to score, like, because 42% sounds great, but what percentage of point shots?
You got to get that shot.
Right. What percentage of perimeter shots actually 100%. Qualify? Tiny amount, right?
But that's a high danger save, and he made it. The one thing, though, and they had it on the power play, and they couldn't finish it. And I've talked about this, like, there are limitations to Stuart Skinner laterally, right? Like, he's a big body, but he is not explosive. He relies on sort of reads and positioning to make up for a lack of lateral mobility. It's not like he's super slow. He's just a big body that's like, he's not explosive east-west. He's got a narrow butterfly. It takes longer for him to recover. And I thought on that power play, you know, and I think Kelly Rudy actually did a nice job of sort of pointing this out on the broadcast. You know, you get a couple seam passes back to back, he's behind. Like, he is behind the play on those, and he's chasing a little bit. And there were a couple times they had him right out of the crease, and they couldn't catch the puck cleanly on the other side of the pass and get a shot on net. And they, part of that is the Oilers defending really well, even on the like when they're penalty killing, sort of blocking those lanes and making it harder to get those shots through. But I think if you're the Canucks and you look at that footage, you're like, this is what we need to do more of. That, you know, again, the downside is Vancouver has been more of that layers and point shot team and less of that let's create slot line east-west plays on the regular. So going away from what they've done well, and those are skilled plays and hard to make, but the exposure is there, just like it was heading into this series. Where I think he's cleaned up is he looks more comfortable off the release. Even when they did have open looks that were blocked or didn't get through, he wasn't digging into his edges and sort of pulling his hands in early, which is what we saw when Besser sort of beat him from some open looks early in this series. And obviously, the Canucks only have so many guys who can shoot like Brock Besser, yeah. Not many. And obviously he won't be in the lineup tonight.
So from the perspective of the Canucks attacking Skinner tonight, you know, we've got a lot of texts coming in along the lines of, oh, they have to test Skinner, kind of this idea that they let him off the hook in game six by not getting more pucks on him. But from what you're seeing, would they be almost better off rather than taking this, hey, we just got to, you know, bombard him with a certain volume of shots to take more of that patient approach? And as you said, look for those cross seam, look for those lateral plays where you see some more vulnerability from Skinner.
Well, I mean, honestly, like the Canucks have been throughout the season, you know, a sort of low volume, high quality team.
Yeah.
And you could probably quibble with high quality, but the percentage, like they don't take a lot of turnover shots that are just the 99%ers. You know, they would rather hold onto the puck and maintain possession in the offensive zone than give it away by throwing a shot that goes in 1% of the time, right? And I actually like that. You'd still like to see more quality mm-hmm. and more shots overall, but I like not turning the puck over and just giving easy shots. And I think that applies here. So many times, and, you know, again, not calling anyone out here on any of the broadcasts of this series, but we heard it with Seelofs too. Like, oh, there's a new goalie in there. Like, get pucks on net, get pucks on net. Like if I'm a goalie, it's like, hey, you want to throw pucks yep. along the ice from the blue line at me and get me into the game and allow me to get some easy touches that I stop every time and give me pucks where I can control rebounds and steer them when I want or take them off my chest and feel good about myself. Like sometimes that mentality that becomes almost cliche to throw out there on broadcast, it's the last thing you want. You don't want them to get like 10 easy shots and feel comfortable in a game. You want to make sure the first couple ones are difficult. Now, can you do some of the cliche things like get to the net and take away their eyes and try and create rebounds and scrambles and make them even less comfortable in the crease? Yeah, absolutely. But the whole pucks on net, just get pucks to the net. As much as they need more than 15 shots, if it's 15 more low danger, yeah. then it really does you no good other than warming the guy up.
I'm curious about your sense of this, because one thing that I thought crept into Vancouver's game actually was I thought they were not as selective in their shots, their shot selection in game six. And there were so many, I mean, how many shots did they miss far side low on Skinner in that game? Like it felt like anytime there was, you know, partial way toward what could be a dangerous buildup, shot goes far side low. It's like 50-50 to not only are you turning it over, you're often clearing the puck for the Oilers when you miss there. That it felt like there were four or five of those in game six. What did you think?
Yeah, that, I mean, it's a good point, Thomas. And to be honest with you, I hadn't thought about it until you brought it up, but it makes sense on a couple levels. So two things. One, I agree with you. They need to hit the net more. Rebounds are sort of a statistical, you know, one of the statistical weaknesses for Skinner. We talked mm-hmm. about, you know, like the biggest one is rush chances, but, you know, Edmonton hasn't given them up a lot and Vancouver doesn't create them. So I don't know that you can count on that. And you can't miss the net as much as they missed in game six, because as much as they only had 15 shots, there were looks where they just didn't hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about this. Angle shots and shots far side can go off the boards and create rush chances for the Oilers. So all those things are true. I will say one of the elements that was in sort of the NHL.com preview of this series on Skinner was against the grain, which is a far side shot down the wing. Like that tendency to not get rotation as he retreats off the rush leaves him somewhat susceptible to a shot just over the pads on the far side. And so, you know, now thinking about it and remembering, and you obviously noted how many of those there were, you know, it's certainly possible. If I can see it, they can see it, right? So it's certainly possible that's in a pre-scout and they just got a little carried away and tried to get, you know, a little too fine, which can happen when you go from a goalie who's the size of me the other night to a goalie who's the size of a mountain in Stuart Skinner in game six.
You know, you mentioned Brock Besser out, and obviously we all know what a significant loss that is for the Canucks on a number of different levels. But as you said, there's not that many Canucks that can shoot like Brock Besser can. You don't want to throw everything out the window that you've done. Obviously, Rick Tocchet talking about, you know, relying on your foundation, relying on your system. But with Brock Besser out, I mean, how do the Canucks kind of go about compensating for that in terms of attacking Stuart Skinner? What are their best bets for, you know, with the personnel they have available, generating that combination of quality and quantity that's been hard for them at times in this postseason?
Well, I mean, Besser's goals, you look at the two he scored, early in the series against Skinner. Those are open looks in the slot.
Yep.
I think the reality of game sevens typically being more low scoring, low event hockey. I mean, that's just traditionally what happens is both teams tighten up. I don't know that you're getting those looks you know, unless you can create enough of a forecheck and create turnovers, you're probably not getting those looks anyways. So, you know, it's probably going to be greasy, right? Like, so if you get to the net and you create second chance opportunities around the net, you know, the one thing about Skinner relative to Pickard is, you know, with Pickard, the back and forth movement, we saw DiGiuseppe sort of slide one between the pads. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be a little less of that. They both have narrow butterflies, but there's a little less of that because Skinner's got more coverage just because of the length of the pads and the length of the legs. You get into those areas, having somebody, rather than just everybody crashing into the net, having somebody sort of slip off to the side and funnel off to the side, if you can chip pucks laterally, that's where you can really open him up and again, expose sort of that limited mobility from his knees east to west. And just the fact that because, you know, inherently, if you have a narrow butterfly, when you drop, that means you don't have your legs stuck out way to the side, like we'd see a Demko or a Shelovs. And if my legs are way out to the side, I only have to lift my knee like, you know, 3-4 inches to grab a skate edge and push. When I have a narrow butterfly, my feet are behind me when I drop to my knees. Mm-hmm. Now, in order to push to my left, I got to grab my right skate edge. Well, it's not right there on the ice. I have to lift my knee up and get rotation. Like, it's just a much bigger, more dramatic move. And you can exploit it with, you know, shots back into the goalie as he moves, or exploit the delays that are inherent in that extra step required to go east-west by funneling pucks off rebounds and broken plays to the side of the net, and making sure you guys have guys stopping there. It's easier said than done against an Oilers defense that I think has done a very nice job on second chances for the most part. But that's something, you know, like, it's not just get to the net and get garbage. There are specific things you can do to try and exploit the tendencies of these goaltenders if you can create those second chance opportunities. And of course, a big part of that is you got to get the first chance.
I want to ask you about Besser's absence from the perspective of Stuart Skinner, right? We know what Besser brings to the top line. We know about the defensive reliability. We know about the power play stuff, especially his work as a screener there. In the event that, you know, he's being replaced in the aggregate, say with some shifts that are Pettersson shifts and some DiGiuseppe shifts and maybe some Lafferty-Mikheyev shifts up with Miller and Suter, if he's being replaced by Garland on the power play, so you've got Lindholm, Garland down low with the three usual guys up top, 5-on-4, what changes does that usher into Game 7 from the perspective of Edmonton's starter?
I don't think it would be much in terms of like how he prepares mm-hmm. or expectations. Like at the end of the day, as a goalie, and we've heard Thatcher talk about this, like, you know, you whatever the puck or the game presents is what you react
yeah.
to. I think for Skinner, all not having Besser would be is like, hey, I don't have to worry about a 40-goal scorer who's beaten me clean a couple times this series. Like,
right.
If anything, it gives you a level of confidence, right? Like, if that's Connor Garland who gets a shot in the slot, I think Stuart Skinner learned the hard way in Game 1. He probably shouldn't over-challenge if he's looking for a 1-tee from the dot, because that's not how he scores. To me, it's just – I don't know that anything changes in terms of his preparation, but I got to think it probably helps him from a confidence perspective, because that is, you know, one of the guys that's beating him clean. And it's always nice when you don't have to worry about those guys, you know, picking up a puck around the hash marks or around the dot with any type of time and space, and knowing like, yeah, because that'd be tough, right? Especially after he's beating you clean a couple, like one block or one glove just over the pads. Do I go down earlier? Do I hold my edges, my patience? Like, you can get into a guy's head that way. And that's one less element that Stuart Skinner has to worry about.
Just in general, Kevin, you know, I don't want to put you on a spot here with a prediction, because it's Game 7 and there's so much randomness at play. But with all of the factors going into this one, right, poor performance on the road on Game 6, but you're coming back home where you played so well in Game 5, losing Brock Besser, a lot going into this one. Do you have a kind of gut sense of what kind of game we might see from these teams tonight?
No, other than, you know, they traditionally do end up being tight checking.
Yep.
You know, like, nobody wants to make a mistake. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, because I think the one thing that worries me a little bit from a Canucks perspective is they seem to have the expectation of that this is going to be a low event, tight checking. That's how Game 7s are, because we heard a number of them say it. Susie talked about it yesterday. Obviously, I covered him in a couple of Game 7s last year with Seattle. And if you're the Oilers, maybe that is how they play. And then certainly tight checking is part of the Canucks' identity. It has been all season under Rick Tocchet, so that shouldn't be foreign to them. But if the Oilers come out with their hair on fire and make a push, you know, and were to get one or two early, and your mindset going in was, oh, this is going to be like a 1-0, get a greasy one, and that's all we need. I do wonder a little bit whether, if that's what you're thinking going in, whether you can adjust. And yet, at the same time, this Canucks team has, outside of game six, rarely come apart in those moments, rarely, you know, ever given up to the point where they're totally out of a game. But yeah, in a game where I think there are far more uncertains than certainties, that would be one little thing that I keep hearing. And I wonder, well, what if it doesn't go this way and you all seem to think it will? What does that do for the mood, for the expectations, for your ability to recover from it not looking how you planned?
Well, and, you know, a guy who's been so crucial to some of those big third period comebacks and the whole idea of, hey, keep it close in the third and we'll find a way to win it, it's been Brock Besser, right? And you don't have him there to have that 6-on-5 magic or that clutch play in the third period. So you're right, it could go that way, but also one of the weapons for the Canucks in those situations is out of the lineup tonight. Woodley, always appreciate it, man. Great stuff breaking it down for us, and enjoy Game 7 at Rogers Arena tonight.
Yeah, my pleasure. You guys aren't on deadline. Jamie's like all like, enjoy it. Yeah, I am. You don't have to file at the buzzer. Thomas is on deadline, but Thomas, you don't have to file at the buzzer either, buddy.
Yes, I do. Takeaways. Ooh. Takeaways have been filed at the buzzer all series.
Okay.
All playoffs.
I always say
welcome to my club. If you can still enjoy this with tonight,
I just make it look so easy, Woody. You didn't even notice. You're sitting right beside me. I'm writing a buzzer story. You didn't even notice.
I just figured Harm did all the hard stuff on deadline.
You're right, though. This is why I always tell Drance, like, I have a way easier job than him. He's always, like, stressed out, like, oh, I got to do this. I got to fly to Dallas. I'm just like, I'm just going to watch the game. Enjoy it. Come in, talk about it tomorrow.
The best is our Friday shows. And he's like, oh, man, I've got this great weekend planned. I'm like, I'm going to cover a game all day Saturday and then fly
and then a practice on
Columbus
Sunday.
Hey, but listen, as Jeff Patterson pointed out in a tweet today, last year this time, I was talking to JT Miller for a story on him trying to qualify for the U.S. Open on the golf course.
Yep.
How much better is this for the fan base in Vancouver and for us too, just to be around it compared to what we've gone through for the past 9 years. So everybody enjoy it. Jokes aside about deadline, I am not complaining. Haven't covered one of these live since 2011 Cup Final, and I'm just looking forward to the emotion in the building and the energy and getting to be a part of it and hopefully not screwing up so badly so that when I write about it, it's reflected in the words.
Hopefully it's a special night. Kevin, we appreciate it, man. Thank you for doing it.
Thanks, guys.
That is Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com.
We got a text in, by the way. Just because the odds of seeing a leprechaun riding Ogopogo are higher, that doesn't mean that Ilya Mikheyev can't score the game winner tonight. What about this for our final segment? Do you have plans?
Well, somebody texted in. Austin Langley texted in really early in the show. I haven't got a chance to it, but he asking who would be the funniest game-winning goal scorer for the Canucks, and his suggestions were Mikheyev or Ian Cole.
Ooh, I like the Ian Cole.
I think
one.
It's got to be Mikheyev.
That would be fun.
I think to me, it's if we're tiering it,
it's
Mikheyev
definitely
is number one.
But let's. I feel like what we should do. Let's have a Game 7 hero draft.
Ooh.
On the other side, we can spend a fair bit of the segment just drafting, you know, 10 players to be the hero.
Yep.
You know, probability wise, who's going to emerge, and not just Canucks players, we'll take Oilers players too, but in the case of every Canucks player, it's who's going to emerge as a Vancouver hockey icon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, versus who's going to help the Oilers salvage their season.
All right, we will do that next. We'll continue to take your text as well, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Final segment of the show coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is... the Dunbar Lumber text line. All right. We didn't do a draft, actually, me and Dimitri, on Friday, because it was just us. And we said, what's the point if you're not here to come in third in the draft?
Dimitri is more courteous than me. I have no problem doing a draft.
Well, that's what I mean. We're going to do a draft now. You're the guy pushing the drafts.
Yeah, I love drafts. I know. You know me.
Of course. So we'll do the draft now. So playoff game seven hero draft.
Game seven hero
draft. From either team.
Yeah.
Just who is likely to be the guy who gets it done. The big story, the hero in a good way, coming out of tonight.
And, I mean, I will take the first pick if you want, or I will cede it. Your call.
I'll go first.
Okay.
I'm going to go JT Miller, man. He has been the hero.
Sorry, we're picking from both teams.
Yeah.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay, you're taking JT Miller.
I'm going with JT Miller.
Okay.
I'm coming at this from a Canucks perspective.
Well, but you're not coming at it from a win the draft perspective. No, not because JT Miller.
I know.
It's
I
a
know
bad
what you're
strategic
saying.
Pick because you know who I'm coming back with
I know
at my
you're
snake
saying,
spot.
And that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. I'm picking JT Miller just because it's been that kind of season for JT Miller, man.
Yep.
Even the last home game they played, right? Who's the guy who's right there on the doorstep to get the bouncing puck and put it in with a great finish? It's JT Miller. Especially with Brock Besser out, the importance of the performances from Miller, from Pettersson or Hughes amped up even more. He's risen to the occasion. He's had an incredible season. It just feels like if we're buying into Team of Destiny and like this is a charmed season and they've gotten all the bounces and you're following through with that script, what does it look like? It looks like JT Miller winning the game.
A big JT Miller game tonight would like... He's already fundamentally altered his legacy
100%.
Over the course of this season. You know, leveling up as a defensive center at the age of 30 is amazing. This guy's also made himself an elite power play weapon, even though that's stalled out as the team's power play has a little bit. Like, the fact remains that JT Miller can be an orchestrator for you 5-on-4, something that certainly wasn't in his bag like when he was acquired by the Tampa Bay Lightning in 2018. So, you know, this is a guy who's reinvented himself multiple times, but this... Like if he's a game seven hero against McDavid, having chased him around the ice all series long, then we're talking about a totally different legacy on Miller. You know, and again, we still are no matter what, but that would really add some rocket fuel.
Yeah,
to,
if you
to the way
talk
he's talked about
legacy, and this has already been a legacy building season for JT Miller, but it's the moments like this that can really take it to another level.
Legacy, national profile. Right? Like an awful lot of stuff would jump and change for Miller if he comes out and delivers on his 101 draft slot. So
that's the way he's thinking about it, I'm sure. Like, oh, man, that's a lot of pressure on me right now.
So look, I'm
his 101 draft slot.
I'm not going to screw around here. Like, I have two straight picks. I'm taking both Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid.
Good picks.
I'll take Draisaitl at the 102 out of respect to one of the great... What? Out of respect for one of the great playoff elevators of the last decade. And I'll take McDavid at the 201. Great value for me. And not a lot needs to be said. These guys score in bunches. And
it's certainly not impossible for the Oilers to win without big performances from one
absolutely.
Of those two. But most of the avenues to them winning involve at least one of those guys showing up in a big way.
If you're an Oilers fan doing your own cope today, right? One of the things I think you're... really trying to hang your hat on and comfort yourself on is the fact that between Draisaitl and McDavid, you know, they don't have Besser in their lineup. Like, you've got, you know, two world beaters. I'm going to take them both off the board here.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, I'm going to go back to the Canucks. I'm going to go Archer Shelovs. Just because if you're talking heroes in any individual game in a Canucks in a playoff scenario, the goalie has a very, very good chance to be the hero. Shutout in game six in the closeout series against Nashville. Very different doing it against the Edmonton Oilers. And you can point to some moments of weakness and maybe have they changed their attack and started to look for more of those screens that can give him problems. That's all fair. But again, if you just start to think about, okay, paths of victory for this Canucks team, what does it look like? Archer Shelov, one goal against type of performance with JT Miller getting the late goal. That seems about as good as bad as anything else to me. So
okay.
I'll go with Archer Shelov.
At
do I get another one now?
Yep.
All right. Let's see here. I mean, I guess I'll go with Stuart Skinner. I'll do the goalie sweep here, right? Like,
okay.
Stuart Skinner, I'm not saying it's going to be fantastic. Obviously, he had some very, very soft moments early in the series, but Kevin Woodley liked the way he reset and rebounded in game six, even though the Canucks didn't test him that much. They're without Brock Besser. So I'll take the goalies with my second two picks.
You know, this dynamic's very much like fantasy football. Like, I always make my worst trades with Dimitri. And I think I always struggle in my draft performances because of Dimitri. Because I'm going to school you in this one now. But the goalie logic I like. I like it a lot more with Shelovs. Right?
Sure.
Because, like, Skinner would go 101 in the possible GOAT.
I just have to take
draft.
An Oiler at some point.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean?
Fair enough. But you know what I'm saying. Like, if Vancouver wins, you know Shelovs is going to have made some stops. Edmonton can win without
Skinner.
Being more than a footnote, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like the Skinner pick, but the Shelovs one makes sense to me.
It's still a goalie.
That's
what
still
I say. Still a goalie.
That's what I say about how they're fungible. I'm going to go with two straight Canucks. So with the 302, I'm going to take Quinn Hughes.
Sure.
And with the 401, I'm going to take Elias Pettersson. There's some narrative heft behind Pettersson. Also,
oh, yeah.
I do think he's come on a little bit as this series has gone on. Not to the extent that Pettersson usually does, but I feel like he's found some clever ways to play inside. I thought that was an awesome little interchange between him and Hoglander to set up Vancouver's only goal in Game 6. I think we're seeing a little bit more from this young man, and I'm still taking him to be a potential hero tonight.
Okay, I will go with Nikita Zadorov.
Wow.
If we're talking about unexpected sources of offense from the Canucks without Brock Besser, we've seen his goal scoring come into play here already in the playoffs. We're talking about emotional leaders for this team. I took JT Miller. He's right up there as well. If you're like power ranking guys who aren't going to be scared of the moment, just from the outside looking in, it's Nikita Zadorov has to be right up there. So I think there's a lot going. And again, I'm playing into narratives a lot here, right? So this has been a Zadorov narrative heavy postseason already, right? So he gets a chance to add to it tonight. I'll take Pius Suter.
Ooh, I like that pick.
I'll take Pius Suter.
I was considering
game
him
six
for my
winner.
Next one.
He's still going to play with JT Miller a lot. He's going to get his bulk of the minutes. He's like, you know, one of the unofficial players of Canucks talk all year since he was signed.
Since before
he signed. It's true.
He was like,
so ride or die with Pius Suter today.
He was like, if only the Canucks had cap space to target Pius Suter was like my take last spring. And then lo and behold.
And then it happened.
And it worked out great.
It did. It's been fantastic.
And they got him again next year at 1.6. What a steal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. So those are your picks?
Yeah, Zadorov and Suter.
So I'm going to take... Now, Pius Suter was in strong consideration for me, but I'm going to take Zach Hyman first. I'll take Zach Hyman with the 601, and then I'm going to... Or sorry, that's the 601, yeah. And then I'm going to... 602. And then I'm going to take... with the 701, I'm going to take... I have to pivot. I will take Elias Lindholm.
It's a good one.
He's
like
come
that.
Up big.
Yep.
We know he's going to get minutes.
He's going to get minutes.
He's going to be around the net. He's a great finisher. Like
That's a good one. That's a good one. Okay, I will go with Dakota Joshua here,
mm-hmm.
who had really strong game ones in both series and then has tapered off. But he's going to get his minutes again. And you talk about guys around the net, all of that. He scored big goals in this playoffs
he's
for them.
He's shooting 30% 5-on-5.
Yeah, I'll take Dakota Joshua. And then to try to balance it out a little bit here, I'll go Ryan Nugent-Hopkins,
nice.
Local guy. Why not?
I like that one. So I'm going to take the other member of Vancouver's second line, which is Connor Garland. And then I'm going to come back with Dylan Holloway, who I think is coming on in this series. And we know he'll play with Dreisaitl and on and on. I'm at this point, like, I'm really focused on winning the draft. And I think this is a blowout. So I'm just going to keep pushing my advantage.
I think we're running out of top six forwards here.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's where it gets fun.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go with, I guess I got to take Evan Bouchard.
Oh, yeah. That's
just
good
as a guy who's likely to score goals, right?
Yep.
That's probably the most likely goal scorer that's left on the
totally.
Board here.
And, you know, he's already scored an overtime winner in this series. That 3-1 goal was massive, and what a shot.
Yeah. So I'll take Evan Bouchard there with my first pick here, and then... Oh, man. I'm going to go Sam Lafferty.
Oh, man. I love that pick.
I'm going to go Sam Lafferty.
I love that pick. There's something about, like, first of all, Sam Lafferty's had some success shooting on Stuart Skinner. It's been so quiet around him. He's been a healthy scratch the last two games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Sam Lafferty is, like, really motivated and physically involved, we saw it in that Kings game, but we haven't seen it regularly enough. Like, I think he can impact these games. It's just that he doesn't make that impact in any sustained way or not enough of sort of sustaining it over the course of especially the second half of the season. But, like, there are absolutely games where you're like, Lafferty looks like a third line pest,
yep.
big speed, and you know you're getting the best from him tonight. I like the Lafferty
fresh coming in after being a healthy scratch, right? You got to think, I mean, not that you need extra motivation, but just fresh legs late in the series.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Nils Höglander.
Sure.
Okay. Nils Höglander, the only Canucks goal scorer in game 6. And why don't we leave the draft there?
Yes. Well, the music bed faded. So that's the official sign for it to be like, you guys have gone on too long. Stop talking about this.
So we each have 9 names. I'm just going to review the draft for everyone so that everyone can enjoy the extent to which.
Let's just go through the whole roster. Who's the least likely person to be the hero?
Yeah. It's got to be Nils Amon.
Wow, that's...
He's been good.
That's a harsh day.
In terms of goal scorers.
So, Jamie, you have Seelovs, Miller, Stuart Skinner, Nikita Zadorov, Pew Suter, Dakota Joshua, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Evan Bouchard, and Sam Lafferty. I have Dreisaitl, McDavid, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, Zach Hyman, Elias Lindholm, Connor Garland, Dylan Holloway, and Nils Höglander. There's a chance you didn't understand the assignment.
Ride or die with my guys, baby.
What's amazing
is... But you traded all for Pew Suter.
What's amazing, though, is like I've amassed a collection of outrageous talent, right? Like, more than half of my list is all-stars, okay? And you're just as likely to be right.
Yeah, of course. Of course. That's the great part about Game 7.
We are actually coming back to review this tomorrow, by the way. I've saved the list.
Well, and I also just wasn't, as like a vibes manifest guy, I wasn't going to take the Oilers superstars off the top. So that was just puts me at a disadvantage.
Well, that's why I thought you would give me first pick. Mm. Like, because I thought... You know, anyway, I appreciate that. You did it for the content.
That's right.
You're nothing if not team content,
Jamie. I did it for the content. That's right. We got still about 10 minutes left here in the show, and this text came in. Last half of the segment has to be just reading Canucks doom texts, and we did just get somebody tweeted at us. When Jamie and Drance were talking about Game 7 coping methods today, all I could think was this. I may try it, and it's a screen cap from The Simpsons of Homer saying, "During the game, I'll hide under some coats and hope that somehow everything will work out." That's definitely a coping strategy. Hide under some coats and see how it goes.
We also got a text in from Sea Legs. Is anyone freaking out right now, or is it just me?
You were freaking out a couple of segments ago.
I just lost my train of thought.
Intern Ben has been sweating this entire time, by
Super
the way.
Fair, by the way.
It's tough.
Somebody texted in, Drance, even a week from now, I'll still be interested in what that point was going to be. I'm invested now.
I do think that what I was going to come around to was like, this Canucks team is also going to look really different no matter how this turns out. And this is a pretty incredible opportunity for a group that was, you know, what's interesting about this Canucks team. Okay, like one thing that I think is interesting to think about, you know, on the eve of a game that will decide their season one way or another, right? If the season continues and you're in the conference final, like, man, that is a massive accomplishment, right? Like the final four, are you kidding me? That 8 playoff wins is wildly difficult to do.
Yep.
And this franchise has only been there 3 previous times. You get that? Like, man, that is a totally...
Yeah, it's the fourth most successful team season in franchise history if you win tonight.
Right.
And it might already be.
Yeah.
I'd have to look at the regular season totals, but like it might already be there, but it's that with a bullet if you win tonight.
So there's an awful lot on the line that will cement this team's legacy. You know, you lose in game 7 of a second round series. It doesn't take away from everything that Vancouver has accomplished, but... It does mean that we go into the summer, assuming the Canucks are good, don't get me wrong, right? Still giving them the benefit of the doubt, but also, you know, with the lingering sort of like, well, Seattle made it to game 7 of the second round last year too, and look how their next season went. There's still work to be done. Like, that's sort of the conversation that kind of surrounds them. And one thing that I find fascinating about this Canucks team, right, is the way they were built in some ways gave management, and this is to their credit, this is not by any taking anything away from Canucks management or these players, but the way they were built gave Vancouver some wiggle room to move on quickly or change direction relatively quickly in the event that things didn't work out, right? So you've got, you know, a lot of the free agents that they brought in, Cole, you know, trading for Zadorov expiring, Bluger expiring,
yep. Lafferty,
right? Lafferty was expiring, on and on. They acquired a lot of guys. They really kept cap space committed for this year as opposed to beyond that. Soucy would be the exception. The Kuzmenko deal, which they eventually shed, would be the exception. Pugh Suter, although that's an extremely low number, right? Now, the benefit of that is obvious in that the Canucks will have a lot of expiring money come off the books following this season. Opportunity will knock to put Vancouver's pro scouting heater, which now includes Elias Lindholm, given how he's performed in the playoffs, to good use, right, in filling out this roster. But it also means that to some extent, the upside that this team has realized isn't locked in, with the exception of Pugh Suter and Carson Soucy. Almost to a man, right? Zadorov, you know, honestly, probably even Cole, Tyler Myers for sure, right? Dakota Joshua, Teddy Bluger, Sam Lafferty, even with the 10 plus goals that he scored this season, regardless of what the second half looks like, DeSmith. All of these guys have probably put themselves in a position where once they test the open market, they're going to get raises, maybe significant raises.
Mm-hmm.
If they test the open market, the Canucks are going to be paying at a rate higher than they might have if they'd committed term last season. Now, I think this was wise given what this group had accomplished. And I also think it puts the Canucks beyond this season on a really interesting kind of conveyor belt, right? You'd love for this team to find a way to retain Nikita Zadorov, for example. Dakota Joshua feels essential. Right. But given how well their stints in Vancouver have turned out, there is an element to which free agents, right, players are going to look at Vancouver as a really unique and interesting opportunity to rebuild their own value, to replicate the path that Joshua and Zadorov have had in sort of upping their like Q rating,
their profile
around the league. And so, you know, I am sort of curious to see how this turns out. One thing we know for sure, the Canucks win tonight, like, it is going to cement this team's legacy, given what they've accomplished. That legacy is safe, but this would elevate it in a really meaningful way. And there's no use pretending it wouldn't, right? This
would be, of course, it would be a huge, huge feather in their cap, man, to win this game.
To get
just
into the
massive, massive feather. To make the biggest feather you've ever seen in their cap.
A peacock feather.
Why not?
A giant peacock feather. Like a feather from the bird from up.
Look at this guy walking around with that giant feather in his cap.
Is he a pirate?
They must have beat the Oilers
in game finalist.
Yeah.
I'm a peacock. You got to let me fly.
On the other hand, you know, you do lose this game. It's still a remarkable season, but it would be probably the last ride of this specific iteration. Like, it's going to be difficult to have this much size on the back end. It's going to be difficult to have this many valuable depth contributors up and down the lineup in sort of resetting this team. You know, what does Ilya Mikheyev's future hold, right? What does Brock Besser's future hold as an extension eligible player, even beyond you know, some of the uncertainty that's always going to be introduced by a blood clotting issue? So, you know, Nils Höglander, given that he sort of fell off in the playoffs and wasn't heavily used. Pettersson.
Yeah.
I mean, so this is a really interesting pivot point for this team. And regardless of it, it's going to be positive. Regardless of it, this season will be looked at as a dream campaign, no matter how it ends at this point. That dream can be elevated. That dream cannot be diminished, right? Like, this, there's no result tonight that I think changes how we'll view this season big picture for this franchise. But I do think it's worth sort of just considering as we have our anxiety building up. I'm freaking out, man. I think it's worth just considering the pivot point that this still represents for the Canucks. Because we've talked a lot about, like, house money or the Oilers have more stakes here. It's still massive, right? This is a really unique chance for a team that we will not see in full next year, without question.
And I think we talked about this earlier, right? The kind of obligation from the fans to bring a certain level of energy, and I have full confidence, zero doubt in my mind, that they will bring that energy tonight. And that's part of it, right? Is recognizing that there's a chance this could be the last time this group is going to play in front of you this year. And this could be the last time this group in totality, really, or anything close to it, is going to play in front of the fans. And there's an opportunity to take there to kind of enjoy that, embrace that, hey, this team has given us so much to cheer for and so many memorable moments over the course of the season. And man, we get to watch them tonight in a big game. Maybe not the last one, maybe the last one of the season. Who knows how it's going to play out. Look, we're going to have time, no matter when the Canucks season ends, to really look ahead to the summer, really look ahead to the offseason and what they're going to do. But just one thought I had is we've had so many Canucks offseasons over the last 4 or 5 years where it's felt like they're so constrained, right? Where it's like because of the cap situation, it's like, oh, man, what do they do? They have so few options. How can they improve this team dramatically? This year, win tonight or not, they're going to be in a position where you have a ton of flexibility. Now, that has risks because it means you're potentially going to lose players. It has opportunity for you as well. And so I just think it's going to be a very, very different offseason because the paths available to them and the options available to them, hugely different than it has been in recent offseasons.
And your reasonable expectation of getting back here, much higher.
Yes.
Than it was when we were discussing this team throughout last spring and into the summer. Which is a credit to where they've gotten to. Now here's a shot. Here's a shot. One game, 60 minutes, baby.
Yeah.
Plus overtime, maybe. To really change a lot. To do something that only three previous Vancouver Canucks teams have ever done in front of a home crowd. Tonight at Rogers Arena. Let's go.
It's game 7. It's a 6 o'clock start time. Batch and Randeep have the call. Of course, full pregame, postgame, intermission coverage here on the station as well. Hey, huge shout out to everyone texting in. I really enjoyed the text about how you're getting prepared for this one. By the way, Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. If you're going to the game tonight, have a blast. If you're watching it, enjoy it as much as you can. If you're coping by not watching it, hey, we appreciate that too. Either way, we'll see you on the other side. We will be back tomorrow to break it all down. Enjoy. It's game 7. Thanks for listening to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Vancouver, Coovers.